Andy Burnham made headlines last week with his resounding win in the Makerfield election, having swept aside the challenge of Nigel Farage's Reform Party candidate. Many believe Manchester's outgoing mayor is heading straight for Downing Street. So, who is the next British Prime Minister going to be? Starmer? Farage? Burnham?
I am proud that this place has shone in the world spotlight these last 5 weeks. And the warmth, humour and hospitality of its people has been on show for all to see. It will never be a stepping stone to me, but instead will be my touchstone.
It's News Talk Daily. I'm Ciara Doherty, and Andy Burnham is said to be blazing a trail. But where exactly is he headed and how is he going to get there? He set out some pretty big ideas during his election campaign, a decade-long project to bring water and energy into public control and an overhaul of property tax and social care. Asked whether this recent victory was a challenge, he would answer. Prime Minister Keir Starmer said he would stand to defend Labour leadership if needed.
Well, there isn't a leadership contest at the moment. There isn't one at the moment. But as I've said on many, many occasions, I don't think that's a good thing for the country to plunge us into chaos. I would also add that now that Andy has won, which is really important, really good, he's a huge asset to us, then now will inevitably be a Manchester mayoralty by-election starting straight away. So it's important that we pull together for that.
But Burnham's popularity continues to grow as the proof that he is the one who is able to keep reform at bay becomes tangible. The question of a new Prime Minister may be closer than initially thought, and it may just be the man breathing life back into the Labour Party. So, could the next Prime Minister be the most popular Labour politician in Britain? Joining me to discuss this is Mark Paul, London correspondent for the Irish Times, and Lucy Fisher, Whitehall editor at the Financial Times. You're both so very welcome to News Talk Daily. And I do want to spend this podcast, I suppose, looking ahead to what might transpire over the next couple of months. But I do think, Mark, we have to look back at Friday and look back at that thumping victory for Andy Burnham. 55% of the vote. It was utterly resounding and it bucked loads of trends, by-election trends generally and political trends.
Yeah, I mean, it couldn't have gone much better for Andy Burnham. You know, in a situation where he was 20 percentage points ahead of Reform in a constituency where just a number of weeks ago, Reform was, you know, roughly 20 points ahead of Labour in local election votes. So he's turned the entire thing on its head. He has not quite doubled the majority in the constituency, but not far off it. And he's performed, you know, better than any of the polls predicted. Reform are clearly off their peak. Restore Britain performed more or less where the polls said that party would be. But really, the story is Andy Burnham's performance on a huge turnout as well. It's an endorsement, he would argue, I'm sure, of him and his message. And look, he hasn't made any secret of the fact that Downing Street is his ultimate destination. That is where he wants to get to. And he believes he has a mandate of sorts to get there now because of the backing that he has received. I mean, I was up at Stubshaw Cross, the community centre in Stubshaw Cross, in just on the outskirts of Ashton and Makerfield a few days ago. And I mean, there was a real energy on the ground that I hadn't seen in the Labour Party since before their general election win in 2024. And I suppose you've got to credit Andy Burnham with that. He has brought a little bit of electricity back into that campaign. But now there's a standoff between himself and Keir Starmer, and let's see where that ends.
And that's the funny thing about this, isn't it, Lucy, because he wiped out the Greens, Lib Dems, Conservatives. I mean, they barely got a vote there at all. Restore and Reform together wouldn't even have beaten Andy Burnham. And yet I can imagine one of Keir Starmer's advisors coming in possibly in the middle of the night. Prime Minister, I need to wake you up here. I need to tell you the result here. It's 55% of the vote. And Keir Starmer thinks, feck,
Well, I think that that is possible. And indeed, on Friday, speaking to even Starmer loyalists, you know, they have to admit that everyone in the party is very chipper about this result, because it shows that Labour can beat Reform. You know, Reform nationally is 10, 11 points in the lead in the opinion polls. And yet this is the third by-election they've lost. You know, as you've pointed out, the scale of the win shows that Burnham does have an appeal. His message of change and hope is clearly popular. It's enthused perhaps people who didn't bother to turn out for the general election in 2024 to go out on Thursday to cast a vote in favour of him. And obviously he will use this proof of success as a platform to argue to the party, I've done it locally, beaten Reform, make me leader, and I'll repeat the feat nationally at the next general election. And we can't sort of forget, even though it was only last month, the English local elections, the Scottish and Welsh elections, where Labour suffered a rout. You know, the sense of panic that has gripped the party and MPs who are concerned about keeping their seats at the next election. This is a very welcome piece of news for them to wake up to today. And it just adds to the sense of inevitability of the Burnham juggernaut heading towards Downing Street.
I mean, does this need to be caveated in any way, do you think, Mark Paul? Because he was Manchester mayor, extremely popular, extremely high profile, and ultimately the people within Macclesfield are voting on somebody who could potentially be the next British Prime Minister. So that's a really attractive vote for people. I mean, can that spread beyond him? Can he lift an entire party, let's say, if he was going into a general election?
I think you could caveat the vote if he had won just by a narrow margin, and you could say, well, look, he had a lot of things going in his favour. Restore Britain were splitting the right-wing vote, Reform seemed to have chosen a particularly poor candidate this time round, and also his own celebrity status. But I think just the sheer size of the victory, I think, pushes all of that to the side. I mean, it is a victory of significance on its own merits, regardless of any of the other noise around it. And because of the size of that victory, everybody has to sit up and take notice of it. I think the most interesting part now will just be to see how long it takes this dance, this standoff between Keir Starmer and Andy Burnham, how long it takes to be resolved. I mean, I think there is a sense in Andy Burnham's camp that they don't want to be seen necessarily too quickly as the agents of chaos in a way. They don't want to spark a flood of resignations too quickly, for example, of ministers. They don't want to be seen as the ones who are turning the country upside down, because that will allow Keir Starmer to say, look, I can be a rock of stability. These guys are going to turn the place into a circus, into a madhouse. But at the same time, if Keir Starmer clings on and clings on and clings on, and if he essentially sits there in Downing Street and says, you know, come and have a go if you think you're hard enough, at some stage, Andy Burnham will have to enter a contest, if that's what it comes to. And I don't think anybody in the Starmer camp or the Burnham camp or Wes Streeting's camp or anybody else really believes that Keir Starmer could beat Andy Burnham in a vote. But what he can do is keep throwing obstacle after obstacle after obstacle in front of him to try and slow him down. And I think the latest one that he's been trying to do is to say, look, you shouldn't do anything, at least until after we've had this by-election for the Manchester mayoralty. Because I suppose, in a sense, he's laying the blame for that at the feet of Andy Burnham, and saying you have a responsibility to help get that over the line before you start thinking about Downing Street.
Lucy, we did see a couple of months ago there was all those really high-profile resignations at his cabinet, and then we had over 100 MPs coming out and saying, look, you've done a great job getting us into government, but you've got to go here, it's not working. Do you think those numbers will grow? Is that perhaps where the pressure is going to come now for Keir Starmer?
Yes, and already there are reports of we could have resignations. That's something that's been discussed by some of Burnham's supporters, or even a fresh letter of MPs calling for Starmer to resign, or at the very least set out a timetable for his exit that would include fresh names beyond the 90-odd who've already gone over the parapet. I think the timetable is an interesting question. There are those around Burnham who think that it needs to be sorted out quickly whether there's going to be a coronation, a transition, or if it needs to be a bloody contest that risks tearing the party apart. But the moment at which Burnham would theoretically take over is a matter of debate. There are those around him who think it could be worthwhile waiting till September just to allow him a little bit of extra breathing space to prepare for government and that all-important first 100-day sprint, not least the budget coming this autumn, which will be a hugely important and difficult one given the state of the public finances. And we've just had the latest borrowing figures from the ONS, which have been dreadful, not to put too fine a point on it. And it is a budget, moreover, that will have an effect on subsequent fiscal events to come, including, you know, the spending review we'll be heading into after that. So I can see it's possible there could be movement within the next week or 2 weeks, but we might not actually see a change of prime minister for a couple of months, potentially.
And September is conference, isn't it, for the Labour Party?
That's right, at the end of the month.
So I just want to talk about Keir Starmer at the moment, because I'm actually fascinated to get inside his head. What are you hearing, Lucy, on the ground in Whitehall about Keir Starmer's thinking at the moment? How does he actually feel about all of this?
Well, incredibly aggrieved, as well he might. It's less than 2 years ago since he won the famous majority of more than 410 MPs being elected for the Labour Party. And yet it seems to have unravelled less than 2 years later. And his thinking, according to those close to him, is that, you know, he hasn't received enough credit for making the party electable after the Corbyn years of sort of hard left, party policy, and that people are acting as though any candidate with a red badge would have led Labour to victory, whereas he strongly believes, you know, that wasn't the case, and you know it was his personal contribution that turned the party around. And linked to that sense of grievance is, you know, the very public defiance we've heard, including when he was in France for the G7, on Friday after the results came in, making clear yet again that he does intend to stand if there's a contest, and making clear that any challenger will have to formally trigger a race rather than just expecting him to roll over. All that said, I'm not convinced that, you know, he won't yet bow out gracefully. It's clear psychologically he's not at that stage yet. But a concatenation of cabinet ministers resigning, the sense of the palace walls crumbling around him, I think could yet force a reality check.
There's a big question, though, Mark, isn't there, whether Burnham should have a coronation or whether there should be a battle to head up the Labour Party and ultimately be Prime Minister. I worry about coronations, I have to say, sometimes, particularly somebody like Burnham, who we haven't seen in national politics for quite some time. Is there not some merit in seeing somebody out there debating who they are, what their policies are, before they take on this crown?
Well, yeah, I suppose if you don't have a coronation and if you have a contest, of course, you can have some sort of a competition of ideas or a festival of ideas. But I think you also run the risk there of looking indulgent to voters who have serious concerns. Actually, there is obviously a huge difference in emphasis between Andy Burnham and Keir Starmer, and there is a huge difference in personality and in approach to politics, but they will both still be operating within the same fiscal constraints, no matter which one of them is prime minister. Some of the policy positions that Andy Burnham had in a loose way alluded to before, like he was previously against welfare cuts, and then he wasn't so much against them, and he was previously about spending more or sort of giving the middle finger to the bond markets, and then he seemed to realise that that wasn't a clever thing to do. Like, from a pure policy perspective, there isn't that much going to be that much difference between them. I think if Andy Burnham, I think, is now in such a prime position and in such a strong position that I think no matter what contest is held, I think in a vote of Labour members, considering how popular he already was before this by-election and how he's the most popular Labour politician in Britain by a mile, that he's likely to win it no matter who he's up against, whether it's Wes Streeting or whether it's Keir Starmer. So look, I mean, sometimes coronations work if you know that the festival of ideas or the competition of ideas isn't going to change much anyway, and they're going to be operating within the same fiscal constraints with the same Labour manifesto from 2024. I think in Burnham's camp, I think a coronation would make for a very nice sunny weekend for them indeed.
I just wonder, I see his speech on Friday. He did say, Lucy, this is a final chance to change, which I think is a nod. Let's not be the Conservatives. Let's not play musical chairs with our leadership. It really doesn't do anybody any favours. Is there any sense of nervousness or anxiety? Look, we need to really test this guy. We need to be 100% sure before we oust this Prime Minister and bring in a new one that he is the right person.
Look, there are many Labour MPs who think now is not the right time for a contest, who absolutely think that he is undisciplined, that he is untested, that the party or quarters of the party are viewing him through rose-tinted glasses on the basis of his record in Manchester, which undeniably has been good when you look at a lot of the statistics. You know, Manchester's growth, unemployment rates and so forth are up there in the league tables as among the sort of the best in Europe in recent years. But firstly, you know, running a city region is very different to running a country. And secondly, a lot of the things that people praise about so-called Manchesterism were actually put in train by other sort of luminaries of Manchester local government, like Howard Bernstein, who predated Burnham. He sort of carried on reforms and ideas that they had put in train. So there is a sense of anxiety among some Labour MPs, but equally, I think the very same people often will admit that, you know, the momentum behind him now feels almost unstoppable, and so it doesn't look like there's going to be a pause. And I would be surprised, although of course it's not impossible, if there were a contest that involved, you know, other candidates like Wes Streeting or Al Cairns at this point.
Yeah, and I suppose there has to be an acceptance within the Labour Party, even those who are nervous, that Keir Starmer can't turn this thing around.
I think that's right. There's a sense that public opinion has turned against him, and therefore it's too late for him to claw it back. The party needs to roll the dice and move forward.
I want to talk about Reform Mark, right, who didn't do well, obviously, in this election at all. How did he take them on? Like, did he campaign them directly? I know he obviously didn't align himself in any way with their policies, but did he confront them, or did he just put out a completely different positive message, a sort of, we're not going to even see Reform, I'm just going to campaign as me?
Well, it wasn't a filthy campaign. I certainly didn't get a sense of that. I mean, look, obviously there was a lot of attention paid to some of the previous tweets and social media messages of Rob Kenyon, the Reform UK candidate. But very much, I suppose, Andy Burnham at least tried to present it as if he was running a positive campaign. He did make a lot of warnings about, look, that Britain should be careful not to get sucked into a descent into US style, as he put it, personalized kind of populist rough and tumble politics. He kind of warned against that. I mean, Reform are obviously well off their peak now. I mean, we have the proof of that in Wales, where they were quite soundly beaten by Plaid Cymru in the elections for the Senate. I think Reform's peak was probably the local elections in 2025, when they also won the Runcorn by-election by 6 votes. And since then, as Lucy has already alluded to, I mean, they've lost several by-elections. Nigel Farage, I think, seems to have lost a little bit of pep in his step as well, I would say.
What's caused that, Mark?
Well, I mean, look, I suppose maybe there's a little bit of over-familiarity. I mean, you can only be the guy knocking on the door, threatening to bring down the establishment for so long before people actually start to associate you with being an establishment politician yourself. I mean, he is, he's an MP now. He's been on TV screens and on radio all the time for months and months or a couple of years now and then. So it's a little bit like the problems that I think sometimes face Mary Lou MacDonald. Obviously, they are politicians of a different hue, but Sinn Féin and Mary Lou spent so long beating on the door of Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, saying, we are the anti-establishment guys, we want to change everything. And then I think after a couple of years of that, people just saw them as part of the system anyway. And so maybe there's a little bit of that with Reform. That might explain some of the excitement, I suppose, in populist right circles around Restore Britain, which is Rupert Lowe's party, which have some, exotic, I suppose, for want of a better word, policies on migration and re-migration. So I think Reform need to regroup a little bit. Their candidate picking strategy, I think, has been poor in the last couple of by-elections. Rob Kenyon was a poor candidate. I mean, when you look, I think he only increased Reform's vote in this by 2.7%, which is nowhere near, since the 2024 election when he ran the last time, which is nowhere near the increase in the party as a whole. In the previous by-election in Gorton and Denton, I mean, Matt Goodwin was really just the wrong candidate, I think, in hindsight, for that contest as well. So I think their candidate selection is something they have a look at. And their candidate selection is probably a committee of one, right? I mean, you've got to assume that Nigel Farage makes these decisions almost on his own. And he's caught between, you know, that cliche of a rock and a hard place. I mean, if he tilts too much to the moderate side, they get accused of being, you know, a retirement home for Tories. And if they lean too hard into the populist right, they'll just get outdone again on that side by Restore Britain. So it's a difficult place for Reform. They'll regroup, but I mean, look, they're still riding pretty high in the polls. If they plateau where they are now, they're still in quite good shape. But there's questions for them to answer, I think.
Lucy, if we do see Burnham take over the leadership of Labour and become Prime Minister, the challenges that Keir Starmer has faced remain, don't they?
Yes, I think that's right. You know, there's still key fiscal constraints on Burnham. There's not a lot of money to sort of splash out on new expensive policies. And beyond that, there's the question of his mandate. You know, without a fresh general election and a fresh manifesto, it's difficult to see how much he can really change course. At the same time, I don't think we should underestimate the importance of personality and a sense of vision, a sense of direction that a politician can bring to the party. And I think that's one of the key things that's been missing from Starmer, an inability to wield a coherent narrative about where he wants to take the country, even though he's actually done quite a lot in less than 2 years. When you think about, you know, employment rights reform, renter reform, removing the benefit cap on two children, introducing breakfast clubs, renationalising the net railways, and so on.
Mm. There's some story positive there figures from the NHS. You know,
that a more skilled politician could tell. And I think the pretty striking victory that Andy Burnham has won is primarily, or in large part off the back of, you know, the feel-good vibes he brings, his message, you know, around hope and change. So it's not everything, but I think it's also easy to sort of underplay as mere optics or messaging something that is important to the public and can help a party resonate with voters.
Mark, briefly predict it for me. How's this going to play out?
I suppose it all depends on how stubborn Keir Starmer remains and for how long. I think I would agree with what Lucy said a few minutes ago, in that, you know, it is, or what she suggested a few minutes ago, it's difficult to see how this ends in how there's a happy ending here for Keir Starmer. I think what will probably happen is Keir Starmer will need people to tap on his shoulder, and people who are very, very close to him, whether it's cabinet ministers, whether it's his closest political allies, or whether it's his wife, Victoria. I mean, ultimately, these kind of decisions, whilst they're also intensely political, they are also intensely personal. Mm. For a prime minister to step down, it's the sort of decision that, you know, if you're a man, you sit down, you sit down and you take a decision like that with your spouse, with your wife, and with the people closest to you. And I can just imagine him sitting down, and imagine if Victoria Starmer at any stage says to him, look, here, time is up, let's just move on with our lives and take your legacy and enjoy it from here on in. Maybe that's the person that he listened to most.
Yeah. Message to you all, lads. Listen to your wives. We know best. But I just think about him in that moment, I have to say, because you say, you know, walk away, we'll get on with our lives, leave your legacy. But he's going to feel like there's just so much unfinished business there.
Well. What else does he want his legacy to be? Does he want his legacy to be a bloody battle with lumps of flesh taken from him by Andy Burnham, by Wes Streeting, by whoever else joins in the race? And it's a race that's, Keir Starmer, polls of Labour members suggest, Keir Starmer is just not in a position to win. Andy Burnham would monster him. in a straight one-on-one vote of Labour members. You know, Starmer might have a chance against somebody like Wes Streeting or Siobhana McMood, but he stands no chance against Andy Burnham. You know, there is that old political cliche about political momentum, the big mo, and it's with Andy Burnham at the moment. You can feel it, you can taste it in the air. I saw it myself on the ground up in Stubshaw Cross when I was there, and you saw the lines of MPs and members of the House of Lords coming up to campaign for Andy Burnham. And I also saw in a room when he gave a speech, lots and lots of aides of sitting cabinet members. So there is that real sense of a shifting of power. I think power is shifting. I think it's shifting against Keir Starmer. And it's just a case of how long he can hold out for.
Yeah, and there is that other phrase, isn't it? All political careers end in failure. Another pretty famous political maxim. Thank you so much to Mark and to Lucy for speaking to me today on News Talk Daily and bringing me all of your insights. There's definitely lots to play out on this one. That's it from the podcast today. You can listen back to every episode of News Talk Daily on the Go Loud Player. For now, from me, Ciara Doherty. Bye-bye.